Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local schools, businesses, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 symptom support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what today's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, sticks and stones. Contrary to the nursery rhyme we were all raised on, words matter, and they can do harm. When the president spoke last week and incited a mob to attack the U.S. Capitol, it led to the deaths of 5 people. In similar situations, both in Washington and closer to home, we've seen leaders of movements speak powerful words in front of energized crowds. Sometimes those words have inspired, sometimes they've led to anger. Irving Joyner has been one of those speakers and over many years has organized some of the largest civil rights demonstrations in North Carolina. He's also a professor of law at North Carolina Central University. And now that we're about a week out from what happened in Washington, I wondered what words he would use to describe that event.
I call it an insurrection and an attempted coup, because that's what it looked like to me, looking at all of the factors leading up to what occurred in Washington. The call seemingly was one to ask people to come to Washington for the purpose of interceding with whatever was going on in the Capitol building on that day, both the Senate and the House. And it appeared in every respect to be coordinated and organized. I've organized demonstrations all over the country. And I've organized and participated in demonstrations in D.C. And it appeared that all of the access points, or many of the access points, both on the Senate side and on the House side, were attacked at pretty much the same time, in the same manner, with the same absence of resources available to repel what was going on. So it seemed to me in every respect that this was something that was planned, and it was planned for the purpose of disrupting in one way or another what was going on in the legislative chambers. But then when I saw that the people wore bulletproof vests, that they had the plastic handcuffs, that they were directed towards specific places in those buildings, in the Russell buildings and the Senate office building, it just seemed to me that was something that was orchestrated out to capture at least those individuals who were in there and to hold them as hostage or something. And so that's just my deductive logic. And we talk about it in the law, the totality of the circumstances.
You mentioned that you have had that experience of organizing demonstrations, not only across the country, but in Washington, D.C. The way the security forces interacted with this group of people, I'm assuming, was very different from the way they interacted with the demonstrations you...
Very, very, very different. And when I watched this thing on television, and when I saw the absence of police presence there, I just kind of figured that if there's a turn here, the police will lose, and there will be the invasion, and there was. They were clearly under-resourced. They did not have the show of power that I'm used to on Capitol Hill. So it noticeably was slack in terms of the security of the buildings that they were there to protect.
So Capitol Police, security forces, I mean, race played a role. How much did race play a role in sort of the preparation, do you think, of how much, you know, the security forces believed that this maybe wasn't the kind of dangerous situation that it ended up becoming. And yet in the Black Lives Matter protests, which were not geared toward the Capitol and not geared toward a coup or insurrection, obviously treated very differently.
I guess I look at it from two different perspectives. One is the expectations of law enforcement as to what is going to happen. Typically, with demonstrations, there are parameters, geographic parameters. You know, this is where the demonstration will be held. This is where the marchers will march. These are the times that they will be there, and everything is coordinated, and people know exactly what to expect. There is a specific place that you turn to the left, to the right, and then there are barricades set up to guide people to help them to understand exactly where their path should lead them. An unscripted march down Pennsylvania Avenue does not generally occur in D.C. If it was unanticipated, which seems bothersome to me that it would be unanticipated, then if it was anticipated, then clearly they did not put in the kinds of controls that would normally be present for a march like that. Black Lives Matter marches were congregated in a particular area. Only certain routes were open to them. And there are always the fears that when peaceful African Americans gather, that it is going to become a riotous situation. And they prepare for that and in many instances provoke it. I would guess that in this situation, they did not anticipate that whites would be engaged in riotous activities, although it seemed to me that that is exactly what they came there to do. If you listen to the promises of Donald Trump that this is going to be wild, one would reach the conclusion that that was a real possibility. Even if you had not prepared for something, you had noticed that you need to be preparing and getting some other people down there to help those law enforcement officers that are present.
Well, and I think of the last 10 or 15 years or so here in North Carolina of demonstrations and protests in various ways. And I think back to, you know, I covered the Wake County School Board when Dr. Reverend William Barber was involved in that, and then the Moral Mondays. And if that kind of inciting language was spoken from the podium that we saw President Trump do on Wednesday, if yourself or Dr. Reverend William Barber or Tim Tyson or anybody who gets up and speaks at those events had told the crowd to go do very specific things, and then the crowd had gone and done those specific damaging things, it just seems that there would have been arrests made all up and down, but also just they would have come for you. They would have come for Dr. Reverend William Barber. And like you said, there would have been arrests immediately.
Yeah, and that's my experience. And we've done the Moral Monday demonstrations here in Raleigh. We've had the regular yearly NAACP marches, and up to 80,000 people have shown up, HKONJ. We have always had in place people who serve as marshals in the crowd to make sure that things don't get out of hand. That there is someone there to give instructions to the marchers as what to expect, what to do. And if you can't follow these instructions, then you ought not be in this march. We believe in protecting those people who come out to demonstrate, as well as ensuring that there isn't conflict between the demonstrators and the police and other people who might be onlookers in that situation. So we've taken pains always to ensure that there is a safe process and engagement by everyone that's involved. Now, that's how you protect your people and have a peaceful demonstration, all of that. You don't have a peaceful demonstration when you're bringing Molotov cocktails when you're bringing firearms, when you're carrying bullet canisters on your side and on your hip, and when you're armed, the involvement of law enforcement as demonstrators, the involvement of people in the military as demonstrators, all people who are trained in military tactics, that further supports my notion of what it is that we can expect. Despite this call for law and order and respect for law and order, it really means just a respect for the order that certain people want to exist within the country, and not a protection of all of the people that's a part of this country.
So what now? Irving Joyner says this wave of insurrection probably isn't over. More on that in a moment.
There are things we're taught not to discuss in polite company, but by avoiding so-called impolite conversations, we're missing out on the chance to make important connections with each other. I'm Anita Rao, and I'm on a personal journey to uncover just what happens when we open ourselves up to talking about taboo topics that affect our bodies and our brains. Find out on Embodied, a new podcast about sex, relationships, and your health from North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
I think it is critical that people be held accountable for what happened.
North Carolina Central University law professor Irving Joyner.
This creates a precedent that is going to be with us forever. And if people are of the opinion that they can engage in these types of acts and there not be some accountability, then it encourages and emboldens people to do the same thing again. So I think it's important that there is some accountability that is etched into the process. And clearly, Congress has a responsibility in that regard. Members of cabinet, from Vice President Pence on down, have a responsibility in that regard. And those responsibilities are enacted within the Constitution, which says that where you have this type of incapacitation of leadership, that there is someone who can step in and relieve people of power. So either through the 25th Amendment or through the impeachment process, something should happen there. In addition to that, there is criminal actions that ought to occur because there were crimes committed. And I know if I had done what had occurred in Washington, that I would be in jail right now. I would have been arrested on the spot for inciting to riot or inciting toward insurrection. So even after the political repercussions are put in place, there ought to be some criminal actions directed at those who participated, those who incited that participation and emboldened those participants to do what they did.
Do you think this is the end of something, or is this the beginning of something?
I think it's the beginning of something. I don't think it's the absolute beginning. I think it has started, that there is now an attitude, an anger that exists. There is an emboldening that has occurred that gives people the impression that they are trying to save what they believe to be their country. And it is orchestrated by a person who is bent on maintaining and usurping power, abusing power for his own interests and the interests of those people who are supporting him. And unfortunately, the peons, the people who are out in the street who have been led to believe all of the lies that's been directed toward them, they are the ones that are going to bear the brunt of all of this. But it is the first time in history that at the very top of our governmental structure, we have had someone who is inciting insurrection and kulak activities within this country. For years, I have been of the opinion that Donald Trump was trying to mobilize a constituency in this country to seek to put him in power permanently. And he found a reservoir of people who have grievances against this country and this democracy, much of it centered on race and racial antagonism, where they feel that they need to physically assert themselves to keep the disenfranchised, particularly African Americans and people of color, out of power. And that effort has been brewing over the years, and that it was eventually going to lead to a situation where there was an effort to change either the constitutional restraints on who could be president of this country and how long they could be president of this country. So to me, it was just a foregone conclusion that there was going to be this type of eruption at some point. And when the January 6th, the message for the January 6th gathering to occur, I just assumed that that would be one of those points. Now we have similar messages going out as to January 20th. And I anticipate that there will be a similar type confrontation that occurs there unless the government gets control of the situation and prevent the gathering from occurring in the manner that it is anticipated.
Authorities are now warning of new and specific violent events being organized between now and Inauguration Day, and potentially targeted attacks on lawmakers in Washington and all 50 state capitals. That includes Raleigh. That's it for this episode of Tested. Rebecca Martinez produced this show. Amanda Magnus is our editor. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. I'm Dave DeWitt. Thanks for listening.